Thank you, JP, for leading a couple of songs that I requested that are what I want to talk about today, drawing near to God. For those who are our guests, we want you to know indeed that we are very honored to have you. We appreciate your presence. Invite you to come back. Encourage you to stay around and get to know this group of family, my family that I love very much. And I think you would probably find the same if you stayed and got acquainted with us. As been announced, today we'll end the process of the selection process of selecting elders. Your job will be done at the afternoon service. And Lord willing, next week we will be announcing the result of that. If you haven't turned in an envelope and you want to, you need to get it in by this afternoon. And as we stated in the lessons that we had a few weeks ago, if you think that there is a man or a plurality of men that would be qualified to serve with our existing elders, we'd like to encourage you to put that name down. If you deem that no one is qualified, we want you to also so state that as well. As the lessons have been presented, and this afternoon we will conclude then the selection process of selecting elders. I want you to turn to the book of Exodus, the 19th chapter, and beginning with the 10th verse. And while you're turning there, has there ever been a place or maybe a person that you would like to go to? Maybe a place that you would like to go, or maybe a celebrity or maybe some dignitary that you would just like to see face to face, maybe to shake their hand. But the problem is that you can't do that because you don't have the credentials. In fact, the reality is that you will probably never get that opportunity in your life. In the book of Exodus, the 19th chapter, the children of Israel had come to Mount Sinai. God was calling them to be His people, to be His holy nation, His sanctified people. God was going to give them the law. And in the 19th chapter of Exodus, and beginning with the 10th verse, we read that the Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And you shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, 'Take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. Not a hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot with an arrow. Whether man or beast, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they shall come near the mountain.'" Thus he's inviting them into his presence. And yet there seems to be a separateness there between God and man. Again in verse 12, "You will set bound for the people all around, saying, 'Take heed to yourself that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base.'" And again in verse 21 of the same chapter, he says, "Go down and warn the people lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish." Thus, while God is taking them as His own, there seems to be a barrier between God and the people. Then in the 20th chapter, we find the scene where they come before the mountain. And the scene is described beginning in the 18th verse, chapter 20 and verse 18. "Now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning, the flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, 'You speak with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die.' And Moses said to the people, 'Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that His fear may be before you, that you may not sin.' And so the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was." Don't let God speak with us, lest we die. And thus there was a sense of reverence, and I think we need to continue to have that sense of reverence in a sense. There was a sense of reverence, but at the same time, there was a sense of separateness between God and His holiness and the people. God is calling a sinful people to Him, but He seems to be inaccessible. There is a distance between them. We find this trend throughout the law. For example, in the same book, in Exodus, the 28th chapter. And beginning with verse 31, there were some garments that the priests were to put on as they entered into the holy place and most holy place. And in Exodus, the 28th chapter, beginning with verse 31, "You shall make the robe of the ephod of olive blue. There shall be an opening for his head in the middle of it. It shall have a woven binding all around its opening, like the opening in a coat of mail, so that it does not tear. Upon its hem you shall make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet all around its hem, and bells of gold between them all around, a golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate upon the hem of the robe all around. And it shall be upon Aaron when he ministers, and its sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before the Lord, and when he comes out, that he may not die." God says, these bells will sound to remind you of the holy presence of God so that he will not die. Again, there seems to be this separateness between God and man. In the 28th chapter, again, down in the 40th verse, it says, "For Aaron's son will make tunics, and you shall make sashes for them, and you shall make hats for them for glory and beauty. And you shall put them on Aaron your brother and on his sons with him. And you shall anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them, that they may minister to me as priests. And you shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness, and they shall reach from the waist to the thighs, and they shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they come into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister in the holy place, that they do not incur iniquity and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and to his descendants after him." Again, this separateness between man and God. A reminder of his holy presence. In chapter 33, you recall that Moses, outside the camp, had a tent of meeting. In Exodus, the 33rd chapter, and beginning with verse 7, it says, "Moses took his tent and pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and called it the Tabernacle of Meeting. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to the tabernacle of meeting, which was outside the camp. So it was that whenever Moses went out to the tabernacle, that all the people rose, and each man stood at his tent door and watched Moses until he had gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass that when Moses entered the tabernacle, that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose and worshipped each man in his tent door." But then this tent of meeting was placed outside the camp, far away. And when Moses would enter the tent of meeting, all the people would stand at the door of their tent. And there was this pillar of cloud that would come down upon the tent as a representation of the holiness of God. Do you get the sense that perhaps you don't belong there? That there seems to be a separateness between man and God, that man isn't fit for God. In one sense, that's true. And in a sense, there is still a need for a fear and reverence of Him. But I would suggest to you that when Jesus came to the world, when God became flesh, that Jesus was the antithesis of the barrier under the law. For example, in the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew, and beginning with verse 13, you recall the record of Matthew that is commonly repeated in the Gospels. In Matthew chapter 19, and beginning with verse 13, it says, "Then little children were brought to him that he might put his hands on them and pray, but the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not forbid them, for if such is the kingdom of heaven.' And he laid his hands on them and departed from there." Here was the very same God who at Sinai said, keep your distance. Don't touch the mountain lest you die. And now He is allowing the little children to come into His lap that He might enfold them in His arms and that He might touch them. Here was the same God who was now receiving little children. And when we think of the ministry of Jesus, how many times did He receive the unclean? For example, in the Gospel of Mark, there was a woman who had an issue of blood. And He commended her because she reached out with her great faith and not only just brushed elbows, but she had a grip upon the very garment of Jesus. Time and again, He would come and receive the unclean to heal the leper, to heal the blind, to heal the lame, to heal those like this woman who had an issue of blood, to cast out the demoniacs. God was wanting the people to know through the ministry of Jesus that now they could draw near to Him. Not only did He receive the unclean, but in the book of Luke, the 15th chapter, you recall before three very well-known parables. In Luke chapter 15, the observation was made, then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to Him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. That was the common complaint of the Pharisees, the separatists. Why, this man receives tax collectors and sinners. But you recall, there was that little man, Zacchaeus, was in a tree. And he says, come down, because I'm going to come to your house today. God, the very God who seems to be separate in the old law, through the ministry and life of Jesus, is inviting them to come to Him, to come into His presence and to draw near. In His very ministry, He would heal the lame and He would receive the sinner. He would allow an adulterous woman to touch His feet and to anoint them with oil and to wipe His feet with her hair. The Hebrew writer, I think, helps us a little bit. In Hebrews chapter 2, he says, then as the children are partaken of flesh and blood, He Himself likewise shared in the same, that through death He might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For indeed He does not give aid to angels, but He gives aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore in all things He had to be made like His brethren, that He might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sin of the people. For in that He Himself has suffered being tempted, He is able to aid those who are tempted. Again, the Hebrew writer, in the fourth chapter, and beginning with the 14th verse, seeing that we have a great high priest who has passed to the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly into the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And then there is the record in Matthew 11. We call it the Great Invitation. Come to Me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take My yoke upon you and learn from Me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And you will find rest for your soul, for My yoke is easy and My burden is light. What a contrast between this invitation and the scene that we see at Mount Sinai. Jesus is saying, come to Me, you who labor and are burdened with sin. Come to Me in your undone condition and find that My yoke is easy and My burden is light. There seems to be this welcoming attitude. Not exclusive. Not the separatist attitude of the Pharisees, but rather inclusive. I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm fixing to say with this. I understand that if we are to please God, that as a local church, there is a parameter, a fellowship that God has given in His Word, and we must honor that parameter of fellowship. But in our personal evangelism, sometimes I wonder if we don't give people the country club atmosphere attitude. Christians only accepted here. Anyone who struggles is not accepted. You follow the rules, you can be in the club. But if you struggle with a rule, sorry. If you're weak with that, sorry, you're not included. I'm sorry, but I don't find that in the Spirit of Christ. Jesus said, come. Not stay away, but come to me, you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Why did Jesus become a man? Well, look in the Hebrew letter with me. First of all, again in the second chapter of Hebrews, and beginning with verse 10, it says, for it was fitting for Him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both He who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all one. For which reason He is not ashamed to call them brethren. That it was necessary for God to become a man, one in nature with man. Keep reading. I will declare your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly I will sing praise to you. And again I will put my trust in Him. And again, here I am and the children whom God has given me. Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, He Himself likewise shared in the same, that through death He might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil. He had to become a man so that He could destroy the one who had the very power of death, and to release those who fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For indeed He does not give aid to angels, but He gives aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore in all things He had to be made like His brethren, that He might be a merciful and faithful high priest in thing pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people, that is to appease the wrath of God. For in that He Himself has suffered being tempted, He is able to aid those who are tempted. Why did He become a man? In the ninth chapter, again the Hebrew writer says in verse 27, in the ninth chapter and beginning with verse 27, he says, and as it is appointed for men to die once, but after this the judgment, so Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who eagerly wait for Him, He will appear a second time, apart from sin for salvation. He died so that He might put away sin, that man might be forgiven of his sin, so that Jesus could say, come. Come to me. Come and sit in my lap. Draw near to me. That's why He died. To put away the transgression that separated man from God, so that He could invite man into His fellowship, in fellowship with the Father. Why did Jesus become a man? He became a man to remove the veil. In the seventh chapter of Hebrews, in the verses 18 and 19, the Hebrew writer makes this observation. He says, for on the one hand there is an annulling of the former commandment, because of its weakness and unprofitableness. For the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God. You remember in the tabernacle there were the holy place and the holy of holies. And there was a veil that separated those two places. But you remember that when Jesus died, the earth quaked. And the veil of that temple was rent from top to bottom. I believe it was symbolic of perhaps a couple of things. Number one, the end of the Jewish economy. But number two, it was the end of this separateness between God and man. God is now inviting man into the Holy of Holies. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to us? Well, consider again what the Hebrew writer says. For example, again in the ninth chapter of Hebrews in verse 24. In the ninth chapter in verse 24, he says, "For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us." Jesus didn't go into that earthly tabernacle, but no, instead, he has gone into heaven, into the very presence of God. Now, I know you've experienced this. You got on the phone and you're calling either the comptroller of the state of Texas or the attorney general or your favorite insurance company. And you pick up the phone and you dial. And you get about six choices, none of which fit your need. And so you listen to the menu again, maybe the third time, and say, "Well, maybe selection four gets what I want." So you hit selection four, and it says, "Sorry, all circuits are busy right now. You'll have to wait." And you wait about an hour before you finally talk to a human being. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but in heaven, the circuits are not busy. At any time, we can talk to God through His Son. In time of need, in time of sorrow, in time of temptation, in time of trials, in times of joy, Jesus has gone into heaven itself for us. Furthermore, the Hebrew writer says in the fourth chapter again, and verse 16, in the fourth chapter, the 16th verse, Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. What a contrast between what the Hebrew writer says and the scene at Sinai. Come in time of need. And furthermore, in the 10th chapter, and beginning with the 19th verse, he says, "Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by new and living way, which He consecrated for us through the veil, that is His flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water." Let us draw near to Him. Come boldly to that throne of grace in time of need. Seventh chapter in verse 25. We have the assurance that Jesus saves completely. The contrast, I think, is between the law and what Jesus accomplished in His sacrifice. The Hebrew writer says, "Therefore He is also able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through Him, since He always lives to make intercession for them." What a great blessing that is. That He is offered through His Son. Never disappoints me. At any time when I disappoint Him, I can go to Him and say, "I'm sorry. Please forgive me." The Hebrew writer again says in the 9th chapter, the 14th verse, "How much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. He has cleansed my conscience, freed me from the guilt of sin, that I might be free to serve that living God. You want to be a Christian? If not, I don't know why. I can't figure it out. Because God offers the greatest possibilities. The fellowship that we can enjoy with Him. The patience and love and, yes, assurance that I can come boldly to His throne of grace in time of need. If there's someone here today who wishes to obey the gospel, we certainly will welcome that opportunity. If today you wish to put on Christ in baptism and that be your need, we certainly would rejoice in that opportunity. In whatever way we can assist you in a spiritual need, if you wish to acknowledge that today, we invite you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.